It's great to see you all here. I'm Scott Shang. I'm acting president of the Environmental Law Institute. This is the 8th year of the partnership between Vanderbilt Law School and the Environmental Law Institute to bring you LPAR. This is really one of my favorite projects at ELI, as it lets us partner with the truly wonderful faculty and staff of Vanderbilt, and also to bring you the best in policy-relevant academic thinking. ELR really embodies what ELI stands for, not to be a think tank, but to be a think and do tank. Yes, ELI conducts research and looks for the best policy solutions, but we do so in order to bring real-world environmental results. We do this through education, 5,000 folks last year, to make better environmental professionals. We do this through publications like ELR and LPAR, so that we get the best ideas presented and debated in public. We also, vital to our mission, take this work and implement it in the real world, working with government officials, communities, business people, and to help manage our vital natural resources and make a better planet. ELI's work, in fact, spans the globe, which many people don't know. For example, we're helping fisher folk in the Gulf of Mexico understand their rights under the Deepwater Horizon settlements. We're working in Nigerian communities to help communities and business leaders help stop acute lead poisoning of children from artisanal gold mining and curb the global mercury pollution that results predominantly from these activities. And we're working in the upper Midwest in various watersheds to bring together floodplain managers, wetlands managers, disaster planning officials, and water managers to understand how each other's efforts affect the same wetlands resources and how they can work together to not only meet their respective duties, but protect the wetlands and adapt to climate change. The common thread that binds ELI together is a passionate belief that we can have a healthy environment, prosperous economies, and vibrant communities founded on good governance. LPAR is a critical part of ELI, and it doesn't just happen. It's a labor of love and lots of sweat. I want to thank our LPAR Advisory Committee members, some of who are with us today, who provide valuable feedback to the Vanderbilt Law students on selecting the articles. I also want to thank Brad Campbell and especially Representative Leonard Lance and his staff for helping to make this wonderful room available. And a sincere thank you to the Vanderbilt Law students, many of whom I was really lucky to have a chance to get to talk to this morning, for their really hard work in selecting the articles, writing the summaries, and putting out the edition, which is they're doing a week before finals. So thanks for them coming and doing this. Today would not be happening without the work of Narayan Subramanian there in the back. Narayan's a research associate at Environmental Law Institute, and not only did he pull this together, not only did he get a record attendance, but this is actually his last day at ELI. So wish him well as he goes back to the work he did before ELI, working with small island nations on the UNFCCC negotiations. And after that, he'll return to law school and graduate school. So I'm saving the best for last, and that's Linda Bragan, who's both the brains and the brawn of LPAR. She's the founder of it, the person who was inspired to do it, the person who worries and works tirelessly to make it happen. So thank you, Linda, for being a quiet hero to all of us here. Let me hand it over to Michael Vandenberg, the other half of the LPAR team, and really appreciate the partnership.
Thank you very much, Scott. I'm Mike Vandenberg. I'm a professor at Vanderbilt Law School, and we very much appreciate the partnership we've entered into with ELI to get all this done. And I want to say just a couple of quick things. Scott mentioned the students here. Will the students just raise your hand, if you would? So one of our first goals here is to give the students an incomparable educational experience, both theoretical, practical, and to suffer the pain of looking at 400 articles that people like me, Professor Merrill and others write, 400 plus every year, and to pick out from them the ones that have the best policy ideas we can find. Of course, that's in anybody's judgment. So why do we do that? Well, part of the reason is that most of us who have been in government and in the academy never had a chance when we were in government to look at the 400 footnotes in a typical law review article. And so we take lots of very smart, very capable people, we put them in the academy, and then they talk to each other. And then occasionally they go into government, don't have time to read even what their colleagues are doing. So our goal here in part is to find those best ideas. We use the students, we use an outside advisory panel that's balanced professionally and politically, and then we try to synthesize those into short form, to let the ideas transition into the policy world. So that's our second goal. Our third goal is directed at the academics, which is the easiest thing that you can do as an academic is assume away all the hard problems. And the joke is that when an economist needs to do something, they invent a trap door or a can opener, whatever it might be. But we all know who've been in the policy world that you just can't do that in the policy world. That trap door, someone will say, doesn't exist. And all of a sudden, your assumption goes away. And now you need to really wrestle with the hard trade-offs. So much of what we're trying to do here is to induce academicians to encounter and grapple with the hardest policy trade-offs that are out there. And I think that's what it takes to do good policy work. And our hope in the long run, then, is not just to provide a good educational experience for the students, and not just to help move ideas from the academy into the policy world, but also to try to induce faculty members to wrestle with the hardest trade-offs that exist, and ultimately to improve the quality of academic scholarship. So that's our goal out here today. And I think what you'll see in the papers we have on the first panel and the succeeding panels, too, are great examples of exactly that. So with that, let me introduce Linda Bregan, Senior Attorney at the Environmental Law Institute, and with me, the co-professor for the Environmental Law and Policy Interim Review class.
Well, good morning. So my job today is to move us along as smoothly as possible. And the way this is going to work, we hope, is that the student editor will introduce the panel, and then we'll hear from the author about his or her article, and then from each commenter. We then give the author a chance to respond to the comments, and that's always the fun part. And then we open it up for discussion among the panelists. And we're going to be sure to leave a lot of time for Q&A because we have really have an amazing audience here today, and I know they can add a lot. Okay, so with that said, that's the plan, but there are always surprises when you plan a big meeting, and we've had a lot of surprises. I hope we don't have any more. Unfortunately, Professor Dana and Professor Mendelson cannot be here in person today. I know they're both really disappointed, and we have promised to do our best to include them via teleconference. David is homesick with a bad case of bronchitis, was advised not to travel by his doctor. He has sent a PowerPoint with an audio recording, and then we're going to try to have him on the line today to participate in the comments and in the Q&A. And we had a little more notice with Nina Mendelson. She has sent a video. She is also going to call in. However, it turns out, another surprise, there is no phone line in this room. About the only conference room in Washington without a phone line. So what we're going to do is we're going to try to connect David and Nina via cell phone for the Q&A. This may or may not work. Believe it or not, it's worked before. We had someone throw out their back 1 year, and they called in, and it actually worked beautifully. So if the technology works, I know David and Nina will tell you themselves how disappointed they are to miss this. Even if it doesn't work, we are going to have a great conversation about their work without them here. It's going to be fine. But I do really appreciate it's not going to be the most, you know, professionally run conference as we are moving the cell phone down the line. So if you are interested, we have some hard copies in draft of the short versions of the articles that are going to be published this summer in ELR. They're on the table outside. There will also be a Vanderbilt law student out there all day who can answer any questions you might have about the program. So thank you so much for joining us. Before we start the first panel, I'd like to hand it over to Clark Agre, who is this year's editor-in-chief of the Environmental Law and Policy Annual Review. He's really done a terrific job this year, and we're gonna miss him. He's going to spend just a few minutes explaining to you the process. Mike gave you the overview. He's going to explain quickly the process that we went through to pick these articles. And then Lorraine Baer, who is this year's managing editor, is going to give you a brief overview of the academic scholarship on the environment over the last 8 years, which starting several years ago, since we were already going through all this data, we decided we might as well report on it and let you know how many articles are being published every year and on what topics. And she's going to do a brief overview. So thank you again, and Clark, I'm going to hand it over to you.